We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with me is TJ Inman, and we are previewing the SEC for the 2021 season for HoosierHuddle.com. TJ, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Doing great. Yeah, it's an exciting day getting to talk about the SEC, which, you know, certainly their fans can be arrogant. However, as you and I, you know, just mentioned before we started, it's hard to call it the arrogance when they kind of earn it. I mean, the SEC, while I think that their, you know, their slogan, it just means more, I feel they rub that in everybody's face. And you can talk about ESPN's kind of constant SEC chatter and all of that being said, it is a conference that produces championships, whether it's LSU or Alabama, and produces top 10 teams and, you know, routinely is kind of the center of the college football universe. So I think it's going to be an interesting conversation today as we get to talk about, you know, depending on who you talk to or what rankings you look at, you know, up to four top 10 teams in this conference.
Yeah, and I've been watching SEC Media Days, and nobody pumps up their own conference like the SEC Network. And I think it's fantastic. You know, it's they play it off as basically everybody has a chance to make a run outside of maybe Vanderbilt and some of the other teams with new coaches. But they hype it up some, and I love it. As somebody who has been to many media days for the Big Ten and have watched it on the Big Ten Network, they just pump up Ohio State and maybe Michigan and Penn State and don't really give the rest of the conference credit, you know, in that area. But it's – if you've watched SEC media days, it's a – they're right. It just means more. It's the unofficial kickoff to the season. For college football for them, it, you know, coaches come in like rock stars, and you know, even the setup looks a lot. It's a giant press conference, so it's not like super cool, but the SEC makes it look cool. So let's get down to it. The SEC, they have some great non-conference games this year, but let's get to the conference first. And then how those games will impact the season, who might surprise, who will disappoint, is anybody going to give Bama a run for the money? Can Georgia finally break through? Is it the year that Florida breaks through? There's, to me, I think there's three title contenders for the SEC, but my title game pick, it's going to be Alabama versus Georgia. How about you?
Yeah, I've got the exact same, and that's boring, you know, but it is, yeah, for me, you have to take Alabama until somebody proves otherwise, and you have to pick Georgia until somebody proves otherwise. We'll talk about, you know, the teams in the East coming up. I just don't really see an argument for anyone else in the East beating a team as talented as Georgia with JT Daniels at quarterback. That offense was significantly better, more than a touchdown per game better with JT Daniels at the helm. You know, that means something. It was a small sample size, but it definitely means something. And you look at what Florida lost. I don't see how the Gators are able to mount the challenge. So you take Georgia out of the East. And I think it'd be kind of foolish to pick anybody but Alabama out of the West, unless you're just going out on a limb and, you know, on the off chance that you happen to be right, you can pump your chest out and say, I knew it all along. This was the year.
Yep, cash that ticket.
Alabama, yeah, you know, Alabama loses, you know, quite a bit, just like every year. And then they, you know, they don't rebuild. They reload. And there's five stars sitting behind five stars waiting to make their mark. So for me, it's those two. I think the race for second and a potential, you know, who's going to be second in the conference, not necessarily in each division, is the more interesting thing to watch, because I do think, like most years, the SEC does have a very legitimate chance at getting two playoff teams in.
I agree. And I'm taking Georgia over Florida just based on their schedule alone. Georgia does get Clemson in the opener, but that's not an SEC game, so it's not going to affect their standings in the East. Florida gets Alabama at home in week three, and they have to go to LSU as well. Those are two tough crossover games out of the West. So it's, you know, you figure that Florida's going to have at least one SEC loss, and then they also have to play Georgia on October 30th in Jacksonville. And, you know, if a wrench gets thrown into everything and Florida knocks off Alabama at home, that's, you know, that's a huge early season game in the swamp. And, you know, if Florida beats Alabama, it's the East is up for grabs, and maybe a playoff spot is up for grabs as well. But Georgia, you talked about two teams getting to the playoffs. If Georgia beats Clemson and goes undefeated in the regular season, represents the East, and Alabama is there at 12-0, and they meet in the SEC title game, the loser of that game may very well may just get into the playoff, because that Clemson win, Clemson is, you know, almost a lock to win the ACC, and probably is a lock to get a playoff spot. But, you know, a new quarterback there as well. Georgia wins that game, they have a shot to make the playoff as well as Alabama. But going back at second place in the East, it is a very top heavy conference. I think there's been a lot of change over the last 2 years in the SEC in terms of coaches, some attrition and things like that. But you know, it's Georgia, Florida, and Alabama right now, and then the rest are playing for maybe a really good bowl and things like that. TJ, who is your surprise team of the SEC?
You know, when you're trying to pick a surprise team from the SEC, it's very difficult for me, because you have to look at what are the expectations nationally or kind of locally of the fan base, and then which team do I think can most exceed those expectations. The expectations at LSU, as always, very high. Expectations at Texas A&M, very high. They expect Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies to win the SEC this year. That is their expectation. Georgia, they expect to break through and win the SEC. Anything less than that is going to be considered not necessarily a failure if they win every game except maybe lose a close one to Alabama. Not a failure, but not a resounding success either. So for me, taking a look at that, the team that I think exceeds expectations is Missouri. Given the schedule, I like Eli Drinkwitz. I think he's a really good coach. And I think that this offense, while they do lose their running back from last season, I do like their quarterback. He was only a freshman last year. I think that Connor Bazalek takes a step forward. I think Missouri takes advantage of Florida in a rebuilding year. And I think that their schedule sets up really nicely for them to have, you know, 8 or 9 wins in the season, which is going to exceed expectations. I think by and large, the ceiling for them by most is considered to be third place in the East. I think they finish second in the East. You look at who they draw out of the West, you know, they draw Arkansas and they draw Texas A&M at home. They get Texas A&M coming to Missouri. They also get home games against Tennessee, home games against South Carolina, a big home game November 20th against Florida, which is the second to last game of the season for them. So I know they're going to lose at Georgia, but beyond that, I don't see any games that they're incapable of winning. Non-conference schedule sets up nicely for them with Central Michigan and Southeast Missouri and North Texas. And then South there, the East opponents, of course, you know, that they get every year. But I see 8, maybe 9 wins for Missouri in Eli Drinkwitz's second season. And I think that's exceeding expectations by pretty much anybody's standards. So I like this Missouri team. I don't think it's a program that's necessarily going to jump up past Florida or Georgia, but this year, given all that Florida's losing, I like Missouri to nip them for second place because of that home game on November 20th.
Yeah, and they catch A&M the week after A&M hosts Alabama. So it's the Alabama-Texas A&M game, and I probably should have included Texas A&M, but spoiler alert, I think Texas A&M is going to be my most disappointing team. But that game could be a season wrecker. You know, if you come in and blow out your chest and say, hey, we're going to beat Bama, and Bama comes in and railroads you, it's takes a lot of wind out of your sails. And basically, you know, if your season goal was to win the SEC and knock off Alabama, that's a tough turnaround, especially to go on the road you know, to Missouri, which, you know, it's a tough place to play, but it's not, you know, it's not playing in at Tiger Stadium or in the swamp or between the hedges or Jordan Hare and things like that. But my surprise team, you know what, TJ, I'm going to do it. I think it's Auburn. And here's why. And surprises could be good or bad. Hedge my bets a little bit. But Auburn has a new coach. It's Brian Harsin, who's at Boise State. He's a good coach. Kind of an unorthodox hire from the SEC to bring somebody from out west, you know, down into deep down into SEC country. But here's the thing. They were really good under Gus Malzahn, it was Gus Malzahn, wasn't it? Under Gus Malzahn, they were pretty good. It's not like they were going 4-8 and 3-9 and 5-7 and things like that. They've won over. They've had a winning record, you know, the last 5 years. They've won over, you know, 55% of their games for the last 5 years, at the bare minimum. He's got a veteran quarterback coming back with Bo Nix. He's got new defensive coordinators. You return your entire offensive line. You return your running back, Tank Bigsby, who's very, very good. The defense, you return 7 starters. There's a lot to work with. And I think, you know, there's games where Auburn might not. They have to go to Penn State in week 3, which is, is going to be a very good test for both teams. You have to go to LSU and you get Georgia in back-to-back weeks. You have to go to Texas A&M, and then you finish the year, of course, with Alabama at home. Auburn's a tricky team to predict, because when you predict them to be awesome, they usually stink. And when you predict them to stink, They're usually awesome. I think people are a little bit down on Auburn. They are a fringe top 25 team, according to most publications. But I think that they could come up and surprise some people, too. We've seen them do it to Alabama a couple of times in the last decade. And I think if they could get that Penn State game, they should start the year 4-0. And if you could do that going into LSU, I think you have a successful a successful start to the season. And if you could get to, you know, 7 wins and a bowl game and win a bowl game, that's, I think, a highly successful season for Auburn. And you start recruiting there as well. Let's go disappointing teams. Your thoughts on Auburn?
Yeah, on Auburn. I love Tank Bigsby. I'm interested to see how the quarterback position plays out. I've never been very impressed with Bo Nix, to be honest. TJ Finley transferring there from LSU, he's not been particularly impressive either, but I think there are more physical tools to work with Finley. Perhaps he's the guy for Brian Harsin to kind of attach his first team to. Certainly the quarterback that's going to lead Auburn to anything that they would consider really successful, probably not on the roster yet. That's going to come in recruiting, they hope. I like the hire of Derek Mason as defensive coordinator. That, you know, I think is something that's going to make dividend or pay dividends for them. I can see that working out as a good surprise pick. The key thing for them, I think, will be, can they knock off one of the big three, LSU, A&M, Alabama in the West, and then can they beat Ole Miss? Because I think those two are going to be who battles for fourth in the West. And if you can finish ahead of Ole Miss, I think that you probably have a pretty good shot of being 7-5, maybe outside chance at 8-4. And you're right, that would be a good first year for Harsin. So that'll be an interesting one to watch, mainly in how Brian Harsin adjusts to the SEC coming from Boise State. Certainly a big-time football program, but a totally different beast that he's dealing with now at Auburn.
Yeah, and you mentioned Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss is going to be the most exciting team to watch, unless you're a super fan of defense. This team is going to put up points. We saw them in the bowl game. I think Matt Corral has an argument for the top quarterback in the conference. They have wide receivers and talent. They have a great offensive-minded coach in Lane Kiffin. And if they could get their defense to resemble anything, to just stop people every so often, Ole Miss could put a scare into people. And they're going to be fun to watch. And Lane Kiffin is always entertaining to watch. But if he could get that defense going – Ole Miss could be a sleeper team in the SEC to make some noise. But let's go most disappointing team, TJ. Who's going to make you most disappointed in the SEC?
Well, I picked Missouri as my surprise. I'm picking Florida as the disappointment. I think if they were to finish behind Missouri, their fans would be very disappointed. But you look at all that they lost from last year's offense, I think it's a big concern. I mean, you're losing Kyle Trask, Kadarius Toney, Kyle Pitts, who was a matchup nightmare for defenses that opened up things for the rest of that attack. Emory Jones is a guy under the microscope. He's going to take over as the full-time starter after, you know, a couple seasons of kind of gimmick packages. That type of thing is not going to work game in and game out in the SEC. And it really didn't work all that well last year. The offense was much better when Kyle Trask was on the field and kind of suffered when they took him off and put Emory Jones on, which it's a tough spot for Emory Jones to have just a few plays here and there. I get that. But you look at some of the newer quarterbacks in this conference, you've got a little bit of exposure to Emory Jones, Bryce Young at Alabama, JT Daniels. You know, you kind of know what you got with him. I of all those guys, I have the least trust in Emory Jones. I know that Dan Mullen finds a way to score points, but that offense is going to have to be really great because it's a tough schedule, and the defense really took a step back last year, giving up over 30 points a game, over 6 yards a play. I don't really like what they have coming back in that group either. You know, they've lost their top players from a defense that struggled. So I don't love what Florida has this season. And with a tough schedule as well, I think Florida will score some points, as Dan Mullen teams do, but kind of sputter to a, you know, 7 or 8 win season, which puts them third in the East by my projections, behind Missouri and well behind Georgia. And I think that that's a major disappointment for those fans.
Yeah, and I mean, the SEC Network was pumping Florida up and pumping Emory Jones up. And one of the questions, I forgot who asked it, but they asked Dan Mullen, how come all the five, like, why aren't you getting the five-star guys from Florida anymore? Like, why can't Florida do that? And yeah, he said, well, maybe he rates players differently. And I think it was a cop-out answer. I mean, you're not going to say, well, our recruiting stinks and
that's
things like
Chip
that.
Kelly answer right there. That's Chip Kelly answer.
Yeah.
Smartest guy in the room, right?
Yeah, why not? But I'm going to go for very similar reasons. I'm going to go with Texas A&M. Every year, they think they're going to win the SEC. They think they're going to knock off Alabama. They think they're going to be – and they don't do it. And they've had the talent with some quarterbacks there. They're bringing in a freshman quarterback in Haynes King, who's, you know – He played a little bit last year, but completed 2 of 4 passes with a touchdown and an interception for 59 yards. You have to replace 4 of your 5 starters on the offensive line. They do get all their skill position starters back. Your defense has some holes to fill. I don't think they're going to challenge Alabama. I think, you know, they're going to run their mouths. And Nick Saban's going to do what Nick Saban does and is going to blow the doors off of Texas A&M when Alabama rolls into College Station. Could I be wrong? Sure. But Texas A&M, I think, they're supremely overrated. They have a couple really good running backs. They have Isaiah Spiller at who's, you know, over 1,000 yards last year. Wide receivers, everybody was over 400 yards, multiple touchdowns, but who's going to be throwing them the ball? That's my question. And who's going to protect guys? You have 4 new starters and a new starter at quarterback with 4 new starters on the offensive line. That's tough. Plus, Texas A&M should be undefeated going into the Alabama game. You get Kent State at Colorado, which is played in Jacksonville, or not Jacksonville, which is played in Denver at altitude. So, I mean, they should be Colorado, but the altitude could take its toll. New Mexico, you have Arkansas. That game's being played in Arlington, Mississippi State at home, and then Alabama. Should be, 5-0? And then you got a trip to Missouri, South Carolina before the off week. And then you finish the year with Auburn at home at Ole Miss. You got the FCS week with Prairie View A&M and then at LSU. If the goal and the standard is to win the SEC, is 9-3 or 10-2 with losses at LSU in Alabama, is that a disappointment? I think it is, based on based on everything that Texas A&M is expecting. So that's why I have them as most disappointing there as well. Several new head coaches, TJ, in the SEC. I think Vanderbilt's going to deal with a year zero. That's a total rebuild job there. Tennessee is a mess. And Josh Heupel, he had a good run at UCF. But I mean, if they could get to a bowl game, that would be, I think that would exceed expectations, or at least be a very good year for Tennessee. If they could get seven wins, I think that exceeds expectations. They've got Bowling Green, Pitt is going to give them trouble, Tennessee Tech. Then you have to go to Florida, at Missouri, South Carolina, Ole Miss, at Alabama. And then you go to Kentucky, who's under the radar, really good, and a really tough team. Then you play Georgia, and then you end the season, of course, with Vanderbilt. So you're looking at least 2-3, three games where you go, okay, they're not going to win those. Your thoughts on Missouri are that they're going to lose that. So that's 4. Ole Miss comes to Tennessee. Kiffin comes back to Neyland Stadium. He's going to want to put 1,000 points up on Tennessee and things like that. So it's a rebuild job. Plus you have all the off the field stuff at Tennessee. So we'll see a lot of attrition there as well, especially from that Gator Bowl team that we got to know so well. And then, South Carolina with Shane Beamer. This is an interesting one. I think they're talented, but I don't know if they're ready. You know, I think a bowl game would be a good year. They do have to rebuild and recruit. You do have to play Clemson, Florida, at Georgia, and at Texas A&M. You do get Kentucky at home, Vanderbilt at home, Auburn at home. It's a tough schedule for a first-year coach. What are your thoughts on teams with new coaches?
Of the group, I do like the Harsin hire the most, particularly with his hire of Derek Mason at defensive coordinator. I think that Clark Lee at Vanderbilt is, you know, built an interesting staff, but they are a long, long way away. Tennessee with Heupel is going to be probably the most interesting one to watch, just because of, you know, the expectations that fan base has versus the reality of where they are right now. And I don't mean their potential or what they should aspire to. I just mean where that roster is right now. It's not particularly good at the moment. The Beamer hire, I don't know. Muschamp did not leave him with all that much to work with. So I think that those two, South Carolina and Vanderbilt at the bottom of the East, are going to have a hard time beating anybody but each other. But, you know, again, of the group, I think Brian Harsin ends up ultimately being the most successful. Outside of that, I felt like they were a little uninspiring as a total group of hires.
Yeah. Because everybody was on Urban Watch to Texas. I wouldn't call it uninspiring. I'd call it kind of under the radar.
Part of this is, it's the same thing that we saw more recently with basketball hires.
Yeah.
It is very, everybody can pay money now. Everybody can pay. And everybody will pay to keep a guy that they want. And coaches have really started to understand if they've got something good going, it is a little difficult to pull them away from it unless there are extenuating circumstances like alma mater, family ties, something like that. If you don't have those ties, it is difficult to pull somebody from a good situation. So the you know, the automatic list of Matt Campbell and, you know, highly successful coaches at programs in the past you may have considered stepping stones. Tom Allen, exactly. Those guys are staying where they are because they realized, I'm getting paid here. I can win here. I'm getting exposure here because everybody's on TV. So I do think that there's a maybe a different standard that you have to hold these hires at first glance to. And it, you know, one of the most interesting, and we mentioned Tennessee, I'm very interested to see what Joe Milton does at Tennessee, quarterback transfer from Michigan. I don't know if he's going to start. If he does, I don't know if he'll succeed. But I'm going to be – if he goes to Tennessee and performs really well the Wolverines struggle again.
Michigan's going to be crazy.
Yeah, crazy. Apoplectic over another quarterback transfers away and does well while we keep floundering behind, you know, Ohio State and, God forbid, the Indiana Hoosiers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Joe Milton goes and lights it up at Tennessee, I don't know what Michigan fans do. You know, we made the comment however many years ago, TJ, when Josh Gattis went up to Michigan and everybody was like, this is the greatest coordinator hire in the history of coordinator hires. He turned around. I think he came from Alabama. He was great at Alabama. Right. Well, they stink. They stunk on offense last year, and they've stunk on offense since he's been there. So if you're Michigan and Joe Milton goes down to Tennessee and lights up the SEC, I think you have to take a hard look at your coaching staff and go, where was this? You know, is Josh Heupel that great of a quarterback whisperer that he took Joe Milton and made him into a superstar? Or is our coaching staff lacking in whatever needs to be done to unlock the potential of these players? And are they ever going to have develop that skill to unlock the potential of, you know, you can recruit all the five stars you want, but if you're not developing them and they don't improve from where they are in their high school selves, it's not going to matter. You know, it's you want five-star players. They're the most gifted players according to scouts and all that stuff, but you also have to assume that they're coachable, that they're gonna get better. And because if you could develop a 3 or 4 star, they're gonna surpass your 5 stars if your 5 stars are going nowhere. I mean, look at Michael Penix was rated below Joe Milton and he totally outplayed him and things like that. So I mean, we'll see. I think Michigan has a big problem on their hands. One, if they get off to a slow start, if Washington comes in there and beats them as well in week two. Uh-huh. But if Joe, if you start seeing former quarterbacks go when you're supposed to have this superstar quarterback coach, you're in trouble. And they're done with it. Now they have an excuse to get rid of him since they redid his deal. You know, there's no, we don't want to pay a buyout in the pandemic. There's no more excuses. The buyout's gone and your revenue's back, hopefully, with fans in the stands, you know, this season. So, who else? What do we think about Arkansas? We haven't talked about Arkansas yet. Arkansas was a team that went 3-7. They lost, I think, 3 or 4 close games last year. They got screwed out of a win against Auburn. I would say they overachieved last year just based on, you know, where they were before Sam Pittman took over. What are your thoughts on Arkansas? They do get Rice. They do get Texas in the non-conference and Georgia Southern. They have to go to Georgia, to Alabama. They end the year with Missouri at home. And then their final non-conference game is Arkansas Pine Bluff. So there's you should go 3-1 in your non-conference. How do they do in the SEC? Because it's the SEC West, and then your crossovers are Missouri and Georgia. What do you think is a realistic expectation? Can Arkansas get to a bowl game?
They can. It's going to take improvement from their defense, which the defense did get better last year. It was a step up from the disaster it was in 19. But it's still, Arkansas gave up almost 35 points a game. So they need improvement on the defensive side, mainly up front. The pass rush was very poor. Possibly the worst in the SEC. I don't have numbers in front of me on that, but generated very few in terms of sacks. And then they're going to need a quarterback to step up, and I don't know who that's going to be. KJ Jefferson appears to be the guy that they're going to lean on. They get all five starters back on the offensive line, but it was not a particularly good offensive line. Now, Sam Pittman is considered to be, that's what he does. He's an offensive line coach by nature. So, you wonder, can he develop that group? Now they have experience. Can that experience translate into success? I like some of the skill position guys they have, mainly Treylon Burks, a wide receiver. They've got some pretty good running backs. It's not a terrible schedule. So I actually think 6-6 is my projection for the Hogs. I like them quite a bit better than Mississippi State, which I think it's a matter of time before that experiment is over with Mike Leach. So I like them better than Mississippi State, but it's such a tough mountain to climb in the SEC West that I think that's probably the ceiling for them.
Yeah, especially when you draw Florida and Missouri out of the East.
Yep.
TJ,
correct. Missouri's their protected game, right? Out of the East, I think.
I believe so. It's the final week of the year. So
cross division rivalry, but it could be worse. But not a whole lot worse.
No. Something that Greg Sankey said at Media Days, and it's hopefully somebody asked Kevin Warren this tomorrow. And if nobody will, I'll try and ask it. What is the impact of COVID going to be on the season? And I know people are sick of talking about COVID, because I'm sick of talking about COVID. But the reality is, I think 6 out of 14 SEC teams were not close to the threshold of vaccination rates and things like that. And we all know what the attitude of the Southern states is about vaccination, and their vaccination rates speak for themselves. He was asked if, because there's no double buys or built-in, there's one bye week. There's no built-in breaks and, for postponements. And he was asked about that. And he said, they might get rid of the player limit. So last year, they had to have a certain number of healthy players to go play a game. And if you didn't have that number, the game would be ruled a no contest or postponed and moved back to a later date. And Indiana fans know as well as anybody that was a load of crap towards the end of the season with certain rules being changed and things like that, minimum game played. Greg Sankey hinted that games would be forfeited or teams would have to play the hand that they're dealt. So if you have 40 healthy players and 30 of them are walk-ons, that's your squad. Let's say Florida gets hammered with COVID on September 18th, when Alabama comes to town, that's your squad going up against Alabama. Or maybe or Georgia and Clemson, like, they're not playing around with, they have zero flexibility to move games around this year. And I think that's going to come into play. I think it could come into play in far of standings, because if a team in the running is going to be forced to forfeit a game, it's going to drop them in the standings, you know, especially if you have to forfeit a game that you probably should have won. Or you lose a game that you probably should have won because half your starting lineup is out. That's something I'm going to keep an eye on for all the conference races. Who's going to end up forfeiting games, or who's going to play with a shorthand and things like that. What's your take on the impact of the potential impact of COVID on the season in terms of standings and playoff positions and representing in the title game? It gets very complicated very quickly.
I think that the who is to be determined, but the if is undoubtable. I think that COVID is absolutely 100% going to have an impact on conference title races, on the college football playoff chase, on the national title picture. We don't know which schools are going to be impacted yet, but I think it is it's bound to happen. I'd be completely shocked if at least one major contest was not heavily impacted by COVID that alters some conference title race or the college football picture. It's unfortunate that we are still in this boat, and I think both you and I are on similar lines with kind of some ways that this could be amended very quickly, given that, you know, college football and being able to go to college football games and being able to go to public places, courts have determined that that is a privilege. It is not a right. We're not going to dive into the weeds of any political thoughts or anything like that, but I think that there are ways, while they would certainly be hotly contested, that they could kind of amend some of these concerns and kind of curb the rate at which we are seeing growth. But right now, it's incredibly difficult to envision the season not being impacted. I also think with 100% certainty that there will not be, we're going to delay the season some, or we're going to,
they're going to play. They need the money. They need the TV. They're going to play. So they're going to put the responsibility on teams and players to do, the right thing and get vaccinated to prevent these things. It's not going to be last year the SEC did a phenomenal job of getting their season going and not delaying too much and all that stuff. But it was, you're building the plane as you fly it. This year, you kind of know you've been through it all once before. And now, you need consequences for COVID outbreaks. And I think those kind of a forfeiture or playing shorthanded is a fair consequence for teams who couldn't get, vaccinated and things like that. It stinks, and it stinks for players. And we saw it in the College World Series, where Mississippi State had to essentially forfeit a run at the title. I think in the semifinals against Vanderbilt, where they were like two wins away from the title series. It stinks, and nobody's rooting for that to happen, or nobody's rooting for that season, some student athlete season to come to an end like that. But if you're a coach or an athletic director, you have to sit your team down and say, these are our goals, and in order to achieve these goals, we have to do this. It's just like running wind sprints or practicing after practice and things like that. You know, this is what we have to do. And if somebody's going to be a selfish teammate and not get vaccinated for reasons other than, you know, medical excuses, then you're putting your team's chances at a title in danger. And we'll see which teams have players who will do anything to win, and which team, you know, which programs have players who, you know, don't want to be bothered with it. So I think it's going to impact the media availability as well. I don't see us getting players outside of Zoom again. It's not worth the risk in terms of having the interactions and a media scrum and all that stuff. And God forbid somebody's sick and, you know, Michael Penix gets sick or, you know, somebody tests positive and contact tracing and all that stuff. And, you know, even if they're vaccinated, you could still catch it. And if you get caught up in the contact tracing testing, you're going to get ruled out too. I mean, you saw it with the Yankees and Red Sox a week or so ago. But, you know, I think they're going to proceed with caution, but they're going to proceed. And there's no more delaying the season. There's no more, we're going to postpone games. It's you're going to play or you're going to forfeit. And the ball's in these programs courts to do what is necessary to get off a clean season and keep people healthy. And hopefully we get a full season with minimal cancellations or forfeitures and things like that. So, but it's naive to think that it won't be affected. It's totally naive. So you're going to see it with the Olympics. You've seen a ton of Olympians go down with it and things like that. And it's not about, you know, oh, the kid's a healthy kid. Well, you could still transmit it to people and they're part of a larger community where people are a little bit more vulnerable. And things like that. So we'll see. But hopefully let's end on a more positive note, TJ. Who's your conference player of the year?
I think most of these races, I picked a defender in the Pac-12, but there are a couple of guys you could make that argument for in the SEC, but since I think Alabama, you know, runs the table and goes back to the college football playoff, I'll take Bryce Young. He of the recent nearly $1 million in NIL deals already, if you're one to believe that. I'm going to take Bryce Young and kind of place my bets on the quarterback of the best team. And that's what I'll go with. But I do think if JT Daniels played in a more kind of open system, I think he would probably be the pick.
I'm going to give my non-Alabama SEC player of the year, because you could go down Alabama's list. It could be Bryce Young. It could be John Michi. You know, it could be Emile Okafor. Could be anybody. It could be somebody we've never heard of at Alabama who runs for 8 gazillion yards. I'm going to go with Matt Corral. I think he's going to put up stupid video game numbers this year, as long as he stays healthy. You know, he took care of the ball pretty well against Indiana. If they could get his turnovers under control, he's going to have a phenomenal year statistically. You know, how much weight is given to, well, you know, team record and wins and all that stuff. But I think he's going to lead the SEC in passing and passing touchdowns. And if I had to go with somebody outside of Alabama, he's my guy.
Yeah, that's I had not thought of Matt Corral, given that I think Ole Miss finishes at best fourth in the West, but that is just statistically, it might be an overwhelming, you know, overwhelming season for him that he gets the nod. That's a good pick, I think.
Thank you. All right. Well, that does it for today's podcast. We're previewing the SEC. We'll have our next conference. The preview is going to be the Big Ten, and that's where we live, is in Big Ten country. So keep following HoosierHuddle.com. We'll be at Big Ten Media Days Thursday and Friday of this week. Matt Smith, one of our student interns, will be joining me, as well as Zach Green will be joining virtually from California. And we'll have everything covered. You can follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. We'll have everything posted up on Facebook as well. Don't forget, our pre-order for Hoosier Huddle gear ends August 18th. So head over to the site and click on the Shop Now button. It's free shipping on orders over $100. There's some sweet stuff, some hats, tanks, T-shirts, long sleeve tees, hoodies, crew necks. Everything you need to get ready for the fall season in Bloomington. TJ, thanks for joining me as always. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks a bunch. Have a good one, everybody.
All right, that does it for today's podcast. We'll be back next week to talk Big Ten football.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.